Session number 5868, Horwind Mandai, Reel 26.
Well now, just for a few minutes, I'll break away from talking about prisoner of war life and try and explain why I don't believe there was such a thing as heroes or cowards during that war. As you know, I was in it from the first week to the finish. That included trench warfare, battles of the Somme, Battle of Arras, 20 months of prisoner of war, and collected three lots of wounds on the way. Well now, we were not really soldiers at all. We were just civilians with a gun in our hands, all young chaps, mainly young chaps. Well now, we came under the old-fashioned discipline of years before, very strict. Now, perhaps it'd be as well if I start off telling the tale about this. From early in March, early in April, we'll say, 1915. At that time, we was in the trenches of Plugstreet Wood, just outside Plugstreet Wood, which was a very, very dangerous part. In fact, we were so close across no man's land, it was a matter of 100 yards from our front line to their front line. In fact, we often used to shout at each other. And if you happened to put your nose above the parapet, it was odds on you lost your hat. In fact, many poor brother chaps did. Well, now let me try and give you some idea as to how it was. Trench warfare. Well, now you went into relief and in the front line. You may have been there anything from a week to 10 days. Well, whilst you were there, you had to spend 2 hours on guard, put it on guard, and 4 hours off, which meant that you had to spend your 2 hours on the fire step, continuing keeping a watch across no man's land. Well, you had to be very smart. If you wanted to have a look, you bobbed your head up quick and pulled it down. But they did supply us with periscopes. That was a narrow box affair, a long box, with a mirror at the top and a mirror at the bottom. But they was not a success, for the simple reason, when you put them up, if they happened to be just a shade above the parapet, it was odds on they had a bullet through and you didn't see any more of that. It frit you more than hitting you, really. Still, that was the routine. Now, here's a case of where medals were got. I'm just giving you a picture of it. Now, some big guy at the back would probably send an order up to find out who the German regiment was opposite to you, and that entailed a small raiding party, perhaps six of you, with a NCO, crawl across in the night and grab a prisoner and bring him back. Often you come back without a prisoner, sometimes losing a man or two on the way. Now, it is something that did often happen. You got a prisoner, you got him back, and when the rations came up, if you know what I mean, there'd be a medal amongst it. Well now, we'll say that was Bill Brown. He had a medal for that. Now when you sifted it down a little way, you suddenly realised that Bill Brown had got an uncle who was Sergeant Major. Well, there was your answer. They had to be given to someone. Well now, the other five there that went with him, they'd done just the same, but no medal. Now, that's what I'm imagining that tale, because it happened hundreds of times, but I did not know personally the person, put it that way. Now I'm going to tell you a tale of one that I did know. That was a Brattle chap, and I won't give you his name, because if I do, well, his relations are still alive, but if he was alive himself, he'd laugh like hell. Now, this is how it all happened. was one Sunday and it was very quiet, just while we was at Plug Street Wood. And he was in the machine gun section at the old-fashioned Maxim guns. You wouldn't know that today. Old Maxim guns. And this particular Sunday morning was in the trenches. He wasn't far from me, perhaps 100 yards maybe, further along the trench, not far along the trench. And this morning he set to and cleaned his gun, stripped it, cleaned it, oiled it, put it back, and he put a belt of ammunition in and just pushed the muzzle through between the sandbags, made a bit of opening so it wouldn't be noticed, set his sights on a church just beyond the German line, sighted it, set it on, and loosed off a belt of ammunition. Well, now, some time after that, I forget how long, might have been a fortnight or so, might have been a bit more, suddenly he had a notification that he'd been awarded the DCM. Well, now, that's the next order to the VC. And he'd been awarded that. Well, he didn't know what the hell for, and nor did we. But when it all boiled down, what had actually happened, behind the lines in those days, the artillery always used to send up a balloon with a cage underneath and an observation officer in it. Well, this particular Sunday morning, they sent this balloon up, sort of, something like the old barrage balloon business, sent that up, observation, he came down and made a report that this church behind the German lines, one of the gunners in the trenches had hit this church, and as the Germans was coming out the church, they were scattered all over the place. Well, this chap had sighted it beautiful, and he didn't know he'd done it, but he got the DCM. Now, I won't tell you his name, but if he's alive, he laughs like how we used to when we come out the army about it. Well, that's how he got it. Now then, I'll try and shift from that how easy it was to get a medal. Now, there was some very, very hard ways of getting one. Tough, real tough, and killed and so forth, getting them. But that don't matter in my belief. Now then, I'll give you the other side. How easy it was to get stuck up again a wall in a firing squad. Now, I'll put it like this, that first of all, in the trenches, now you was on night, perhaps you was on in the night. Well, now, if it was a quiet night and warm, between 2 and 4 in the morning, it was always hell of a job to keep awake. Well, now your mates, if it was a nice night, they'd be sitting along here and there along the front asleep, and you might suddenly feel, oh hell, I'd love to sit down just for a minute. Well, if you sat down, once you ever sat down in a feeling like that, you'd had it, because no sooner you sat down when you was tired on the fire step, away you went. Now, if you fell asleep, because you always put your arm through the sling of a rifle, always, when you were asleep normally, and at the front trench, and if officer came along, and he was a decent officer, one of your own officers, decent one, he'd give you a kick on the shins and say, come on, kid, up on your feet, and that was the end of it. Now, if it was a nasty officer, which there was some, come along, spotted you fast asleep, and you'd be right away, he'd just slide the rifle off your shoulder, and this had happened times, but I never saw one. This had happened times, we knew it. Well, now, he'd slide the rifle off your shoulder, take it away, and soon as you woke up, you'd wonder where the hell your rifle had gone. And you had to go along and get it. The officer knew, he'd take it to the captain's dugout, make his report out, and the captain couldn't do anything about it. And that's 1,000,000 to 1 you would have a court-martial, naturally. It's a million to one. In those early days, it meant a firing squad. And there was nothing for it. And now I'll give you another case. Almost the same way you got a court-martial. And that was when you was on, every so far along the trench, there would be a little dugout where four or five of you could get in, perhaps a few more. Now, if you was on and it was your turn on sentry, and they happened to start whizzing a few shells over, and you began to get just a little bit nervous, and didn't know what the hell to do, and you was really nervous and frightened, well, you drop in the dugout, and that was fatal, because if officer came along and found you wasn't on sentry, you'd had it. And that was another certain firing squad. Well, now, after the war, when I came back to Wolverton to work, I was a bodymaker. Well, now, in each of those ambulance coaches, we had to strip the whole of the interior and turn them into brake vans. Now this is what I want to get at. Every one of those ambulance coaches had got a padded cell in it. One part of the coach was all set aside with a padded cell to put men in that had collapsed in the trenches and at the front. Now I'll tell you for why there was such a hell of a cry. I ought to have said this previously. Hell of a cry in England when it became realised what was happening. So many people having to face firing squads, they altered the tune. The British forces, the headquarters and that, altered the tune completely and called what they called shell shock. And it was shell shock, although a good many tried to fiddle it afterwards, but that nearly cut the whole of this foreign squad business out, because they put these padded cells in the ambulance train. I was brought back over into England and sent to asylums and hospitals and so forth. Well, now, what actually happened then, it was found out that many of the cases was where it was found in local newspapers. Such as, I'll give you instance, well, the ones I've been talking about, but I don't mean the one that had the medal. I nearly said his name then, I nearly let it slip. What I'm talking about is, we'll say, Bill Brown. Now, your local paper would have the headlines, oh, Bill Brown, local lad, local hero, gets the military medal or DCM, whatever it is. And then another week, it might have been in, oh, local lad, well-known athlete, Jack Jones. His mother had a lovely letter from the colonel, died in action fighting for his country. What a shame that rubbish was put in the paper. And yet that poor bugger had been stuck up against a wall and shot for cowardice. Now I'll give you just a few real facts that I know that happened. I'll give you the names of these now I'm at it, because that's all right. Poor old boy's dead now, this one. Now, when we was at Plug Street, I'm talking about old Fatty Odle, mate of ours. We were all mates together. So was this other one that had the DCF. And now old Fatty wrote a letter home. You see, you was allowed what they call a green envelope to write private correspondence. Mainly, I think, for married men to write to the wives and so forth. Anyway, what they call a green envelope. Now, you could seal that down. Well, occasionally, they checked them. This was early on. They opened the green envelope. Well, poor old Fatty, he wrote a letter to his gal, old Liz Scragg. Well, he did eventually afterwards marry her and, you know, all right. Well, now he wrote a letter to Liz and told her where we was, Plug Street Wood, made different chaps, you know, and mates. Any of us had met his mates, and some had been wounded and some killed and all that. And they opened Fatty's letter, and blowed if he didn't get a court martial for writing to his gal. Now his sentence was so many days tied to the wheel. Now, I don't know him, I forget now so long ago how many days Fatty had. Now, every day, whether it teemed or rain, it didn't matter what it was, old Fatty had to be tied to the wheel for so many hours each day. Now I'll tell you the name of the man that tied him up, and that was Bugle Major Charlie Teagle. Now years after the war, when we come back, old Charlie used to tell us then, and Fatty, he used to say, bloody near made me weep every day having to tie him to that wheel. But that was his job, and that's what he got it for. Well now, old Fatty later on, he's a brave chap, Fatty. Well, here I'll go again, although I don't believe in it. Now later on, old Fatty, he was a stretcher bearer. Well, that was a hell of a risky job, of course. Well, Fatty had the military medal. And I shall have a drop of my old medicine again out the bottle. Well, Fatty had the military medal. Now, it was said then amongst the chaps, crew, I was home wounded then when this happened, but they said, normally old Fatty should have had the VC, because what he'd done was far better than most of them had done that had got one. But because he had had a court martial for that silly little thing, writing a letter, I reckon that's what stopped him. But later on he did get recognised a bit more. He had what they call the Italian Croix de Guerre. Now just for a minute to talk about that shell shock and cowardice and so forth. It happens very often. I've seen it myself, and I've been like it myself. We've all been like it at times in the trenches. There's one day it don't affect you a little bit. I keep stopping to cough. I've got a hell of a cold again, I know that. Well, now one day you feel a treat. They're shelling and messing about for him, but you don't seem to worry. Another day you just feel just the opposite. You know, you feel a bit jittery and think, oh hell, I wish they'd back in, stop it. You get that feeling. Well, you can't help it, and if it happens, you happen to have one of them turns and anything goes wrong, that's cowardice again. Can't help it. Now I'm going to tell you another tale about myself. What happened actually to me as I run hellishly close to getting a court martial. I hadn't had a good captain, I should have had. I'll tell you how it happened. Just behind the lines of Plug Street, there was a big farm. Now they'd been almost completely blown away. The wall, some of the walls stood, but underneath there was a long cellar all underneath. And at the back of the farm, there was a small farmer's cottage for the farm worker. Now underneath that, there was also a cellar. Now there was a platoon or a mob of men put reserve underneath the farmhouse, and and this cottage at the back, I was a lance corporal. Oh blimey, I had made me a lance corporal. I don't know what the hell for, but it don't matter, they had done that. And I was a lance corporal. Well, I'd got a section of about eight in it then, and I was underneath in the cellar at this cottage behind the farm. Now one day, the Germans opened up with a hell of a clatter with shells, so I crawled out the cellar, crawled along the floor and lay behind the wall looking out in case Jerry was trying to break through across that bit of narrow no man's land. I laid there, I told our blokes to get ready in case. They was down in the cellar. Now shell hit the wall of this farm, and I heard a hell of a shout and a squeal, and I hollered across loud as I could, "Who is it?" Now one chap shouted back, he said, "It's your old mate, Sid." I never thought for a second what I'd done. I jumped up and started to run across to this farm, and this bloke shouted back, "Go on back, he'll be all right. Go on, he'll be all right." So I turned round, I ran back and lay behind the wall. Eventually the shelling stopped, so I went and got back down in the cellar. Well, when night time came, a sergeant and a corporal came to this cellar where I was at this cottage, and he said, "Corporal," he said, "you're under arrest." I said, "What the hell for?" He said, "You are." And he turned to this other corporal, he said, "You take charge." Said to me, "You come about." Now I said, "What's it all about?" He said, "You'll find out." So anyway, on the way back, he said, "You know what you'll be charged with, don't you?" I said, "No." He said, "Well, cowardice and desertion. Desertion under shell fire and cowardice." I said, "Bloody hell." He said, "You'll find that's right." Well, I knew the answer to that. Firing squad, no doubt whatever. Anyway, he took me back in front of old Captain Birchall. Well, he was a nice captain, he was brave as hell, he was. He got killed eventually, but he was a brave, blimey, a bit later tonight, 8:30. And I went in front of him and he said, "You know what you've done, don't you?" I said, "Yeah." He says, "You know your charge?" I said, "No. Desertion and cowardice." I said, "No," and I explained as well as I could what had actually happened. I said, "I didn't desert." He said, "You did." He said, "I saw you from the dugout run away." I explained how and why. He said, "Well," he said, "you know the answer." He said, "If I send this report through," he said, "you know the answer." But he were a decent bloke and he'd give me a blooming good dressing down. He said, "I don't know how you wasn't it, but apart from that," he said, "what about your men?" He said, "Suppose you'd have been killed and that broke across," he said, "who was going to lead them? Were you running away like that?" He said, "You running away, get killed, and there's your men haven't got a lead." "Well, he didn't have to dress me down, but I asked for it." And at the finish, he said, "Well," he said, "there's only one small thing in your favour." He said, "That was, instead of you running away, when you run out of that cottage across to that farm, you were running towards the Germans and not away from them." He said, "That's the only loophole you could have possibly had." But he said, "It didn't stop you running away from them." Now, I've tried to explain as well as I can. I was through the whole show. I saw all sorts, heroes and cowards. And I saw a coward one day, and the same man's been a hero the next day. So I don't believe there's any such thing at all. Because in a war, you're not human. But I'll give you my final view of what I think, who were the heroes and who were the cowards, in my view. And that is, the heroes to me were the 2 million men that lined up outside the recruiting offices in England. They were the heroes. Now I'll give you the cowards. They were the thousands that lay dead in no man's land, and the prisoners of war. They were the cowards because they were no further use to the war effort. And that's my summing up of heroes and cowards. Well, now, When I got old, my old darling and me, we had a ticket to go to the Albert Hall at the memorial service on the 11th of November, remembrance service. Well now, when they dimmed the lights and the poppies began to fall, there was a loud, clear voice used to speak. At the going down of the sun and in the morning, we will remember them. Now, remember who? I leave you to judge that. Well now, I've told the tale about that. I better start and drift back to talk about the prisoner of war days. You'll say, what the hell was he wondering about? Well now, I ended the other tape, I believe, where we'd been down in the village at Domna. The old boy had let us out to have a right raw binge at the village pub. Well, we'd done very well. We had a nice night, as I explained. Then, the orders came through that we got to go back to Healdsburg. Now, I'll try to rake me brains, and how the hell we got back, I cannot remember. Not only that, I can't remember how we got from Healdsburg to Domna. But never mind, what actually happened, I can remember. We'd all got our boxes of food, a food parcel with all the boxes and that. Well, there must have been some marching to be done, because what was decided was that they couldn't carry the boxes. So it was decided that I should go down in the village of Domna, find an old boy that done a bit of carrying with his cart, wagon thing and horse, done a bit of carrying. I went and found him and arranged that I should stay behind, pack all their boxes on his old van thing, pack them on that, and drive through the night. And it must have been a distance, because the others all marched off and went away. I'm talking about the English. I don't know about any others. I can't remember the others. But the English went off anyway. And I stayed behind, and at night loaded him up onto this old van thing of his, and away we drove through the night. But it must have been a hell of a way, because I remember during the night we pulled up at a village somewhere and went in a pub, and the pub were closed. But that didn't matter about hours in them days. But that bloke, the old boy, drove me there. He knew the one at this village, because we went in and we sat down, and the old boy got us some bottles of wine out. We sat and had a good drink, and I know I went out to the van then and got a tin of stuff. Well, a tin of bully or whatever it was, I forget now, but I went and got some tin stuff, went back in, and I took some of them little bread rolls in, and oh, how didn't they enjoy them? They hadn't seen white bread for years. We sat there and had some wine, had a feed out of my old parcels, because I knew we were getting on the way back then, we should be all right, although I'd got plenty, we'd all got plenty. Now we moved off, and it was getting light in the morning, as I can remember, when we drove into the camp at Healdsburg. Now our chaps there, they were waiting at the gate, right outside at the gate, waiting for us to come, because they began to wonder where the hell I'd got to. But anyway, that's how I arrived, and I can't remember any other way how we got there. That's the only way I can remember. Now, I don't know if there's a minute or two left on this tape, but if there is, I'd like to mention that at that farm where I ran out to try and see my old mate Sid, that was a Braddle chap, my old schoolmate, Sid Carroll. Well now, the chap that shouted was a Braddle chap named Arthur Willis. Now, Sid Carroll, my old mate, is alive and well in a home at Oney, close by here. And Arthur Willis, he's still alive, and lives in one of the council houses the other end of New Bradwell. Now last summertime, when we was having a drink in the club, it cropped up, and he mentioned about that affair with old Sid and that farmhouse. Now, to prove it, should any of you care to, you can go and see old Arthur Willis the other end of Bradwell, and he'll tell you that's absolutely correct what I've told you. Well, there is a laugh to wind up with. Old Arthur Willis, above all things, he won the MM, Military Medal, would you believe it?